It is a great pleasure to welcome to Asian Investing Summit 2022 returning MOI Global instructor Isaac Schwartz. Isaac is the portfolio manager at Robotti and Company Advisors. He is passionate about global investing, has lived in Asia for a number of years, and we'll talk about Asia investing today. Always a great pleasure to have Isaac with us. He brings a unique perspective on global investing, which has added tremendous value to the MOI Global community over time. And Isaac, I'm grateful to you for coming on this year as well to share your perspective. So why don't I turn it to you for some initial remarks, and then I look forward to having a conversation with you.
Thank you, John, for that kind intro. And certainly, I'm happy to be back with you this year. What I wanted to talk about borders on two investment themes that are of great interest to us. One is looking for fallen angels. Of course, that's often like an IPO that disappointed. And then a few years out, you revisit it. But it can also be something bigger, thematic. And another theme that's of a lot of interest to me, which is Central Asia. And a couple of years ago at Asian Investing Summit, you and I chatted about Kazakhstan. Well, the fallen angel idea that touches on that I want to talk about today is investing in the country Mongolia. This is a very small country of 3.5 million people that's in a very large area of 600,000 square miles. So it's around a fifth the size of the continental US. Mongolia is a poor country still. It has around half the GDP per capita of China overall, which of course means it has a small fraction of the per capita GDP of coastal China. It was a communist country that was not a part of the USSR, but was sort of a de facto Soviet republic, in some ways not unlike North Korea. But it became a democracy in the early 90s, which it has been since then. With multiple vibrant political parties. Like many countries around the world that have vast territorial reserves, Mongolia has a ton of natural resources, especially metals and coal. And that was how the country originally came onto my radar. When the global financial crisis happened, a big theme coming out was the Chinese government's stimulus plan in response to the global financial crisis. That meant that all sorts of infrastructure projects in China got accelerated, and it created a huge commodities boom. And this was beneficial for countries like Australia and Indonesia that produce raw materials that China consumed. And it was hugely beneficial for Mongolia too. The difference in Mongolia was that for the most part, for historical reasons, a lot of the resources hadn't been well developed. But on the promise of a large resources industry, there was a sort of a moment in the sun of capital raising, which happened in the year 2010. There were many IPOs of Mongolian resources companies in that year. And the ideas I want to talk to you about are not just in resources, but I'm just going to say a few words to give a little bit more background here. There were IPOs in Hong Kong, Australia, Canada. And probably the most successful of those of that 2010, 2011 vintage IPO era was a company called Mongolian Mining, which is still traded in Hong Kong. It raised $700 million in 2010. It had the pre-IPO backing of some very important investor groups in the region. And that company is down about 95% since its IPO through till today. And that is the best performing of the major IPOs from that era, and one of the best performing overall. I say this to paint the backdrop, and I guess the other backdrop to the economy there is that if you plot a chart of Mongolian GDP versus the coal price, and the Business Journal Inside Mongolia recently did had a nice infographic on this. For 20 years, it's an amazingly tight correlation, because coal is the first, and specifically metallurgical coal, coking coal, is the first resource that's been well developed in Mongolia. In a few minutes, I'll talk about copper and some more valuable resources that they're in the process of developing. But that years-long correlation unfortunately diverged just in the last year or so. And what I mean by that is that as the world has emerged from the pandemic crisis and there has been pent-up demand in lots of economies, of course, commodities have bounced back. And the coal price has bounced back, but the Mongolian economy has, for the first time, not followed this and has not bounced back. And I believe that therein is some of the opportunity. Well, why has the correlation suddenly disappeared? It's because there are some unique problems at this moment that are all transport related into China. In the old days, an important national interest project for Mongolia was to move away from its Soviet aligned past for business reasons. And I mean physical business reasons, because politically, economically, it has moved away, and it has important ties with China, with Japan and Korea. But for physical reasons, the rail gauge that's used in Mongolia is still the for industrial products is still the Soviet is still the Russian rail gauge from the Soviet times. And this does not match the Chinese railroad system, and it creates major bottlenecks for bringing products into China. For many years, there have been effective stopgap measures of trucking commodities into China. Only as has been widely publicized in the media recently, and has frankly come under stronger scrutiny lately, China has kind of gone above and beyond with the absolute strictest COVID policies in the world, and so they won't let truckers cross the border from Mongolia. And so the borders are basically closed. Mongolia has to the north, it borders two countries. To the north, it has a 3,000 or 4,000 mile border with Russia and a similar size border with China to the south. And And anyway, the border with China is the important one for its economy, and this has been sealed. And so I think that this is putting an additional stress on the economy that that's potentially obfuscating an interesting long-term opportunity. And I wanted to briefly talk about three companies with you today. And that sort of leads me right into the first one. When we talk about long-term opportunities in Mongolia, there's the most iconic long-term opportunity that's been that has been an important focus of the Mongolian government to promote, and that has been of international news, internationally newsworthy for many years, is the development of one of the most important copper mines in the world. The company is called Turquoise Hill, listed in the US and Canada, a Canadian company with Mongolian operations that's half owned by Rio Tinto, which recently bid to buy the half that it doesn't own. And this is a mine that today is a top 20 copper mine in the world, but is in the advanced stages of finally developing their underground mine. And with the development of the underground mine, Turquoise Hill has the opportunity to become a top five copper mine for the world. And so it's interesting that after a very long development period and a lot of delays due to natural political gridlock that happens when there's such a project that creates so much wealth, but also has sort of an outsized importance to an economy. Of course, it's a political hot button issue, and there have been debates over the arrangement in terms of the ownership sharing with the government, because the government has a stake in the ownership, also with tax policy related to it. And last month, Rio Tinto sort of shocked the market. This is a company that they've been developing since 2006. They bid to buy out the half of the company that they don't own. And already a number of shareholders have complained and are pointing out that Rio Tinto wants to pay $2.7 billion to buy half of a company that they paid $6 billion a long time ago, or over many years, starting in 2006, including a rights offering that they did later, that they paid more than twice as much to buy the other half of, right at the moment that the promise of the most valuable part. So I don't want to spend more time on this. This is a widely followed company with very good analyst coverage of the production estimates and of the cash flow estimates. But I did want to put this on the radar, potentially of the MOI community, because this is an interesting sort of a merger arb investment, because it very much looks like Rio sort of put a floor on the valuation of the company. Instead of talking about the mining industry and its cyclicality, I wanted to talk about two very different sorts of consumer investments as a way to play on the economic growth in Mongolia. First, I wanted to talk about a company called APU, APU. That's their name and also their ticker symbol. They're the largest listed company on the local bourse in Ulaanbaatar, with a $600 million market cap and a long history of profitability, of good dividends, and of good growth. This APU is the largest beverages company in Mongolia. It dates back to communist times. It was the largest state-owned enterprise in beverages. It was privatized in the 90s. And 5 years ago, Heineken came in and bought not primary shares from the company, because the company did not need capital, but Heineken bought secondary shares in a transaction from the two control shareholders. So today, Heineken has a 25% stake. There are two control shareholder groups in the country, and then the remaining float is listed on the local exchange. The beverages that APU sells are bottled water, bottled spring water, vodka, and beer. Their famous vodka brand is Chinggis, which is the name in Mongolia of Genghis Khan. And they also have a number of they have the leading beer brands in the market. In addition to a modest valuation, with a P around 13, and a good payout of dividends, a good yield at the current price because of a good payout ratio, and good organic growth prospects. Beverages is a pretty standard sort of a business that, you know, grows a little bit faster than GDP. There are two other very interesting aspects to this company that I'd just like to highlight briefly. One is that one is an opportunity in dairy, and one is an opportunity in the export business. To speak first briefly about dairy, so APU's background is in sort of longer shelf life beverages, you could say, right? Beer, water, and vodka. But because they're by far the largest food group in the country, they have made significant investments in the last few years in the dairy business. And this is interesting because of the powerful distribution network that they have built out. And Mongolian people are amongst the largest consumers on a per capita basis of both meat and dairy of anyone in the world. It is a country with, I believe, more than 10 times the amount of lives, 10 heads of livestock per capita, some number like that. So that's the people's diet and their culture. And now you have a company that has established itself with excellence for years in certain product categories, and that now seems to have a very, very credible opportunity to branch out. One of my colleagues told me that it reminded him of Vinamilk, which I thought was an interesting comparison, because in Vietnam, a number of international food companies have come into the market over the years, but the real Vinamilk started out in dairy and then branched into other products. So it's not a perfect analogy, but the point is an excellent incumbent company using its distribution network to get an edge. The only other potentially interesting angle to the story is that Apu was a domestic focused company for its history, and then I'm not sure to what extent it was the company's plan to begin with, and to what extent Heineken influenced it. I'm not precisely aware, but in the last couple of years, they've started to make real efforts at export business, and so the percentage growth of export has been enormous, but off of a very tiny base. So so that's something that I'm looking out for. Another interesting Mongolian consumer investment is in the banking industry. There are currently no publicly traded banks in Mongolia. However, there are multiple ways to invest in the banking sector. The way that interests me the most is through a Japanese conglomerate called HS Holdings, which is listed, which is traded on the JASDAQ in Tokyo, with a $400 million market cap, which is a conglomerate with various assets, both domestically and internationally, but whose most important asset is 60% ownership of Han Bank of Mongolia, Han, K-H-A-N. Han Bank is the largest bank in the country with $14 billion in assets and $1.5 billion of equity, and it earned $200 million last year. And its shareholders are 60% this publicly traded conglomerate in Japan, and its other shareholders include a family group in Mongolia and some development finance institutions. I think that this is a I think this is an interesting, the Japanese conglomerate is frankly a mishmash of assets in the way that a lot of conglomerates can be. First of all, I have a positive perception of this mishmash for a specific reason. And secondly, I believe that there is an interesting catalyst in their largest, most important investment, this bank. So to very briefly speak to the mishmash, my positive impression there is just that after years of holding the same assets, they had some real estate related businesses in Japan, they had some investment broking businesses, they've they've divested some of the portfolio and they've shrunken down the company in a way that looks sensible and looks return on invested capital oriented. But leaving that aside for a moment, the Mongolian government has has been talk in Mongolia about having publicly traded banks going back many years. Even during that boom that I mentioned earlier, when commodities were in vogue a little more than a decade ago. At that time, there was already some talk of it. And I think one of the reasons it didn't happen was that the industry was smaller. And I think that there was a perception that who needs another to you. Anyway, there were various reasons why listings didn't happen, but now it has become an issue of paramount importance. And in fact, a number of the banks, including of course the largest bank, are preparing for IPO. So, given the challenges in the Mongolian economy, it's not necessarily the case that, you know, that there's huge interest in these IPOs. They might come out at pretty modest values, but at least in this case, I believe you're paying a very modest price for that by investing in the parent. So now maybe John and I'll have a discussion, but those are I think that Mongolia makes sense because there were a lot of challenges there. Things take time, and in democracies, as we all know, things take time, and there are competing interests and important infrastructure projects. And of course, a Turquoise Hill mine is a key infrastructure project, and all the infrastructure surrounding it. These things take time, but these are real projects with huge investment behind them, with enormous coming cash flows. And the thing about an economy that has resources, but where the sectors have been underexploited, is that the effect of the initial development can become very powerful. So, you know, the remote Dalansagat province in south central Mongolia, where Turquoise Hill is, has other valuable mines and previously didn't have good connective infrastructure. But of course, Rio is there because of their, forgetting the value of the company and how outside passive minority investors in the listed subsidiary that owns this one company are treated. Rio needs to treat their host country properly, and that creates a myriad of after effects where there are roads and there's opportunities to develop other sorts of projects. So hopefully China will get past COVID. Of course they will, because everywhere in the world has, and we can't time exactly when it'll happen, but it will happen. And so the idea that that there could be significant economic growth in Mongolia again is a reality. And there are opportunities to play at investing in the resources. And there are also opportunities to invest in Mongolia in more sort of consumer companies. So, well, that's my piece. Thank you, John, for giving me the opportunity to join today.
Great. Thank you so much, Isaac. Interesting perspective and interesting companies as well. I'm happy that two of the three names are investable for, I guess, Western investors. Investing in APU could be an issue for anyone who doesn't have access to the Mongolia Stock Exchange. I assume that it's listed only there. Is that correct?
For the time being, it is.
Yeah.
There's been talk about doing a dual listing, but it's not such a cumbersome process, honestly, to... I don't know. I've opened accounts in some countries that are more difficult it's not such a cumbersome process, but it is.
Understood.
It isn't okay. As easy maybe as the other two. Yeah. Obviously.
Yeah. On Turquoise Hill, you mentioned that it's a potential merger ARB opportunity as it sounds like a bit of a take under perhaps. Mm-hmm. So how are the shares trading at the moment? Are they kind of above the takeover bid, or
they're about 10% above. So there's definitely that expectation that that the price will be revised. Yeah.
How do you think that could happen? Would that be by someone else entering the bidding here or some other way?
No, I don't believe that that's possible because Rio owns half of the company and they are excited about this investment, which is why they want to own all of it. So, never say never. Certainly an opportunistic group could say, we'll pay, 40. I believe the bid is 30, 34, and it's trading about 38. Those are Canadian dollars. But no, I think more likely is that the shareholders could potentially pressure the company to pay something closer to the price that they paid for the other half of the company.
Understood. And what kind of time frame do you put on this?
The debate about it is going on right now. So this is sort of an event driven idea. And frankly, I'm not really an event-driven investor. I'm more excited about the other two opportunities. But I think it's important that's the highest profile, by far largest market cap company operating in the country. So it's interesting and worth a look. And it's circumstantially, it's very clear that it's a take, as you put it, not mincing words, it's take under. But yes, I think that's going to happen. Whatever will happen is going to happen very soon.
Got it. Switching to APU. So it sounds like, I've never heard of that brand or name or company. How insulated is the Mongolian beverages market? Could other international players, become competitors here? And conversely, is there any growth outside of Mongolia for this company?
Well, they're definitely looking at growth outside in all three of their core businesses, water, beer, and vodka. As far as the major international players coming in to compete, I guess one sign of the sort of respect for the barrier to entry accorded by their brands and by their distribution system is that certainly a company as excellent as Heineken, can go anywhere in the world and could have started a company directly, but they chose to enter this country by investing in this company. So I do think that's a testament to good balanced corporate governance, as well as an independent recognition of their business model.
Perhaps on HS Holdings, I'm curious roughly what portion of the intrinsic value of HS Holdings is attributable to the Mongolian asset?
Thanks for that important question. So it's most of the value today because of the way that they've shrunken the company. There are a lot of other, in terms of book value, it's around half, but in terms of earnings, it's the bulk. It's more than 80%, and that's because their other businesses are not very high earning, and so the HS Holdings is very much a proxy at this point for investing in Han Bank. And of course, it's a little bit of an unusual proxy since at this moment, every one of the banks themselves are unlisted. But there's obviously, as any sound banking system has, there's very, very good disclosure of banks have very strict financial statement disclosure, and Han Bank has been the leading bank in the market for years. But I would be reticent to ascribe too much value to the low earning pieces of the HS conglomerate. But potentially that could provide some interesting opportunity at some other point. For example, following on their experience with Han Bank, they entered Kyrgyzstan, which is a very small country, but also a country, actually a similar population, a slightly larger population, but a small landmass in Central Asia. And they invested in a large bank in one of the large banks in the Kyrgyz market at some point within the last decade, maybe close to a decade ago. And this was after many years' experience in Han Bank. I believe that Han Bank used to be called Agricultural Bank of Mongolia, and so in the communist times, it was the People's Bank with the most branches across the country, and then it was privatized in the early 2000s, maybe 2004, and it was privatized by HS Holdings in partnership with the other current shareholders. So they've all been long-term dedicated shareholders building up this business.
It's interesting that the leading bank in the country is controlled by a Japanese company. Could you talk a little bit more about the genesis of that and whether there's some special relationship between Mongolia and Japan in terms of trade or any other factors?
That's a great question. I would mention Japan, and I would also mention Korea. And the answer is yes, there are special relationships between Mongolia and both of those countries for a number of reasons. Geopolitically, it was always important, I believe, to people in power in Mongolia, to the country's interest, to cultivate other strong neighbor relationships because they're sandwiched between two very, very big and powerful countries that you know, that have their own interests, of course, as everybody has their own interests. In certain ways, Korea has an even closer relationship with Mongolia than Japan, because there are certain ethnic, linguistic commonalities historically, that evolved in the 2000s into quite a bit of FDI from Korean companies. That's also similar to the story with Japan, although HS Holdings, which is the HS is are the initials of HS Holdings is a little bit of a special case. HS stands for the initials of a very successful travel industry entrepreneur in Japan, who also controls a publicly traded company that's in the travel business. That's sort of like it's the leading kind of mass market tourism company. And as back in the 90s, this entrepreneur's tourism company made inroads into Mongolia as an attractive, nearby, relatively very, very beautiful, very undervisited tourism destination for Japanese. And with that origin, it led to a number of investments by his group. So another one of the large publicly traded companies in Mongolia with a $200 or $300 million market cap is a company called Gobi Kashmir, that's a company where the two control shareholders are the same as HS are the same as Han Bank, but it's not held within HS, it's held directly by those investors, and then the family group that's an investor in Han Bank is also an investor in that company, Gobi. And that's quite an interesting company as well, because what I was mentioning about how much livestock is in the country, Gobi was going back to the communist times, Gobi was the industry cooperative that managed buying cashmere from herders and processing it and selling it into the international market. And it got privatized after communism. And the country is extremely successful in the production of cashmere Gobi started out as a raw material supplier to many Western companies, including Loro Piana. So it's like very high quality products. And then over the years, they've diversified into their own brands. So, you know, that's another case of like Japanese and investment and it involved bringing, all the you know, good things that sort of investment, brings, advanced equipment and production methodology. So I think it's an interesting case to invest alongside companies like Heineken, like HS, provides a lot of advantages.
Okay, terrific. Well, Isaac, I will leave it there. Would just encourage MOI Global members to feel free to reach out with their own thoughts or questions. We are happy to facilitate an introduction should it be desired. Thank you so much for taking the time to be with us today and share your insights into investing in Mongolia.
Thank you, John. Bye-bye.
Goodbye for now.